I'm proud to be a part of a coalition of over 45 podcasts that have come together to share the stories of vets during the week of Veterans Day. Listen to more of their amazing stories at voicesforvets.co.
They say I'm lost because I'm a dreamer. But my vision extends beyond the future. Everything I want is in my reach, but I need someone to come and dream with me. I can't help that I'm a dreamer, cause I see so much of my future with you. Everything we want is in our reach. Sweetheart, come lay right here and dream with me.
This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Welcome to the Dreamers Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Pardo, and today I'm interviewing Rich Quick, who is living his dream through hip-hop music. Welcome to the show, Rich.
Thank you, sir. In the building, as we like to say.
Yeah, yes, you are. I appreciate you getting up nice and early to come out here.
No problem.
Let's get started by giving some background about yourself.
Sure. Rich Quick, hip-hop artist from South Jersey. Most known, I'd say, for being in the Philly hip-hop scene, but that has expanded to up and down the East Coast, around the country, and actually, you know, all around the world. People are listening to my music and supporting what I do, and I'm pretty happy about it.
Well, we've known each other quite a long time.
We have.
Going back probably about 10 years now.
I think more than 10 years. I think, more than 10 years, dude. 10 years.
You think you're right. Probably in 03.
Like 02, 03, yeah.
And, you know, you've come a long way since you got started, even before then.
I have.
When did you get started, exactly?
I started writing raps when I was in second grade. There wasn't any other rappers in my class or in my elementary school at all. I liked doing it. I liked hip-hop music. It spoke to me. And I wanted to rhyme. And so I did. And it wasn't until I got into junior high school that I actually met other rappers or other kids that liked to rhyme also and freestyle and cypher and things like that. That's pretty much where I got my start, I would say, was like schoolyard cyphers with other MCs. There wasn't many of us, but we were there, you know what I mean? And we definitely used to have fun. And that's kind of where, this is during the times where there wasn't too many white rappers out. It was still kind of like, I was kind of like a sideshow, I guess you would say. Like, it was unusual to see a white kid that was freestyling in cypher circles. But that would later change to now it's like, you know, no big deal at all. It's not special. There's nothing, you know, unusual about it. There's a million white rappers out there now. But just at the time, it was unique, to say the least. And people were drawn to that, I think. So I was able to create a name for myself.
What year was it when you were in second grade?
I'm not sure. I would say, you know, probably 96, 97. Because Tupac was still alive, so it was probably 96. You know what? Tupac might have died already. That's how I judge what year things are, whether Tupac was alive or dead. Now that's hip hop for you. Around that time, 96, 97, 98, it had to have been 96.
Well, how old are you today?
I'm 27.
Okay. I'm sure somebody can figure out the math.
Yeah, they'll figure it out.
So what would you say hip-hop means to you?
Hip-hop to me is, I think, different than what hip-hop is to other people. There's these hip-hop elitists, I like to call them, and there's people that strongly believe that hip-hop is these fundamental elements and, you know, hip hop is graffiti and break dancing and DJing and MCing, and I don't necessarily adhere to any of that. Then there's these hip hop heads out there that think that hip hop, real hip hop, people always want to say real hip hop, like Nas is real hip hop and Talib Kweli is real hip hop and Mos Def is real hip hop. What it comes down to is, you know, Waka Flocka Flame is real hip hop also, and Lil Wayne is real hip hop also, and Drake is real hip hop, and you know, hip hop as a culture encompasses so much, and there's a lot of my peers that don't accept that. I always use the analogy that if you have a baby and you want the baby to have blue eyes and the baby has brown eyes, you don't throw away the baby. You know what I mean? Like, get this baby out of here. You love the baby, right? It's yours. You created the baby. That's how I feel about the new school of hip-hop music. Did I want hip-hop music to go in that direction of, like, beats that I don't necessarily care for or, like, rhymes that I don't necessarily think are very clever? No, I didn't. I would prefer to listen to hip-hop like I grew up on. But I'm also getting older. And the thing that I remember most about growing up in hip-hop was, you know, older people would look at us and say, you know, that's not music. That's not music. And on top of everything else, you dress funny. You know what I mean? And that's what people are doing, the hip hop music. They're saying, well, that's not hip hop. You know, hip hop is something different. And on top of that, your jeans are too tight. You know what I mean? Get all the way the heck out of here. So hip hop to me is a culture that has been around for decades now and encompasses so many things in not only American culture, but just world culture in general. Hip hop has inserted itself into almost everything around us. There's elements of the hip hop culture.
You know, it all started out with just finding a way to express yourself, much like any other genre of music. Because at the end of the day, I mean, hip-hop itself is music, but it is a culture. It's the same. And you could say that about rock music, the rock, you know, the metal lifestyle, right, the whatever lifestyle. So it was really just a label. And, you know, people are able to express themselves however they feel in that sense. But at the same time, people want to make money. And they want to appeal to the mass market.
But I don't even think that it's necessarily always about that, per se. I think that people get a bad rap for those reasons. Like, oh, well, so-and-so is just making their money. Well, there's a whole bunch of people out there that really enjoy that type of music. When hip-hop started, the rhyme schemes were very basic. It almost nursery rhyme status. And all of the beats and the music that people were rapping to were party instrumentals. And that was the whole reason that hip-hop got started. So for anyone to come along and say, this isn't real hip-hop because the lyrics are basic and the beats are party beats, then you know what I mean? You're kind of like putting your foot in your mouth because you claim to represent, you know, this culture, and you really don't know anything about this culture.
So what would you say inspires you?
You know, I've been asked this question many times, and I'm always disappointed in my answer because I feel like it doesn't do justice to what I actually mean. So I'm going to try and say this as best that I can. I'm inspired by people. Sometimes it's individual people. Sometimes it's groups of people. I'm inspired by my peers, by my friends, by my family, strangers that I meet and talk to, other artists that I you know, have the opportunity to meet or even just listen to their music or, you know, am able to see how they do their craft, whatever it may be. Creative people inspire me. I think that we're all, at the end of the day, storytellers in a way. You know, everyone has their own story. My story is different from your story. I tell a different story than what is the true story also. And so do you. And so does everyone. they're creating their story. And the reason that we create our story is because we want people to hear it. And that's how we want people to judge us, by the story that we tell. And I think there's something really beautiful about that, because in a way that makes us all artists, writers, or creators, which is ironic because if you read the Bible and it says God created people in his image, he was a creator. And if you believe in that sort of thing, then you can make that correlation that people are creative, and that inspires me. I'm inspired by the stories that I get told, and I'm inspired by the fans that reach out to me and just tell me to keep going. There's so many things that I can draw inspiration from in this world. You know, some people you might say looking at the ocean or listening to the wind at night or whatever. Like, no. People are who inspire me, because people are who I'm making this music for and creating projects for. They're the reason that I keep going and doing what I'm doing, because I know that people want to hear my story.
I don't think you have anything to be ashamed of for that answer.
There's been times in the past where I'm just like, people inspire me. Next question. You know what I mean? That's almost as bad as saying the ocean or the wind in the nighttime.
No, it makes it vague and artistic.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What is it about writing lyrics that makes it so special for you?
That's a good question. To go back to what I said in the last question, we're telling a story. I just so happen to be able to, you know, have the ability to write my story down and find the right words to do that. Not everyone has the words. I remember there was a man, you know, these two kidnapped women, and there was the guy that, you know, broke them out of the house that they were in, and his name escapes me at the time, but he became an internet sensation because he didn't have all the right words that people wanted him to have. You know, he's given a hero's speech. They said, "You're a hero," and then, you know, he didn't have all the words. He was just spouting off a whole bunch of things that were entertaining to people. Now, he was, you know, saying what he could say and probably not necessarily what he wanted to say. You know what I mean? And I think after he got some time to think about it, I saw some better, more compelling interviews with him. I always am reminded of that when I think about just having the right words. And knowing the right words and understanding how I can communicate with you and with somebody else, knowing people enough to know how I can communicate with this group of people or how to tell my story. I'm really good at telling my story no matter who I'm speaking to or however I'm telling my story at that time. So lyrics to me are number one. They're the most important thing. Lyrics are what I listen to when I listen to music. I'm all about the story, dude.
Yeah, it was very funny when that video hit the internet. But it was a good story because people got rescued.
Yeah, absolutely.
He just was saying it, as you put it, his own truth.
Yeah, exactly. There was not, I don't want anyone to think that there was anything wrong with that at all. I think that this country, unfortunately, made a mockery of that situation because he didn't say the words that they expected him to say or the words that they wanted him to say. He said his own words. I really wish that he was treated more like a hero than to have remixes of his, you know, funny antics on the internet because he chose to say, you know, some things that were funny to people. I was entertained by that interview, absolutely, without a doubt. But it just reminded me that, you know, not everyone has the ability to express themselves in such a way where a multitude of people can truly understand the situation, the gravity of what happened.
Well, the interview was taking place in front of a bunch of crowd of people. Right. And it's like, what do you expect? He's going to be funny, and he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
Outside of doing something extremely nice. Right.
and heroic, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, how was your dream of rapping received by your family?
my mom has always been very supportive of anything that I decided to do creatively, which is interesting because she's not an artist herself, but she always supported the arts in our house growing up. She always listened to hip hop music, and that's one of the reasons that I got into hip hop music was because it was in my house. She always supported everything that I did, whether it be early in my career, she would drive me and my friends to the studio. That's a big deal because I was able to record professionally at an early age, you know, 14, 15, just through connections that I had made. A lot of that actually goes back to the teen center where we actually know each other from. But if I didn't have a way to get there, if I didn't have a way to get to these studios, then I would have never recorded, you know, professionally at that age. And I would have never learned recording etiquette and things like that, that I eventually was able to polish myself as a later teen, 18, 19, whereas I could go to other studios as more coming of age and be well polished and mm-hmm. professional, and really people in the business really respected that I was so polished. Everything I pretty much owe to my mom and her supporting me early on with what I was dreaming of doing. And my family as a whole has been really supportive. And I think that that's great. Not everyone has that. I know people whose family does not support anything that they do at all. And especially in hip hop music, there's a lot of people that are, for whatever reason, against hip hop as a culture, as a musical form. And I feel really blessed to have my family in my corner.
Going back to when you got started taking it more seriously, what steps did you take to get started?
So we talked about going into middle school, meeting other MCs, freestyle ciphers. In those freestyle ciphers, I met my best friends for life, and namely my friend Mo Salms, who is now a gospel rapper. And he became my best friend fast. We have a long time friendship that I still talk to him just about every week. And we decided that we were going to record music. And I found a way that I could do it on my computer with, you know, a computer mic. And it was terrible quality. But that's what we wanted to do. And we were the only people that could do it. There was no one else doing it at the time in our city and in our circle. And so once we started recording music, we said, hey, you know, maybe we're in these, you know, hip hop ciphers every morning. Maybe we should form a group with some of these guys. And we assembled the best ones. And there were six of us, and we were called Ragtag just because we were so kind of thrown together. Like, there was nothing consistent about us. It was just, we were the only rappers at that time. Now, there's so many rappers. It used to be that you had to be good at it in order to do it. Well, now there's a lot because it kind of became easy. Again, not complaining, just saying. So we formed a group, and then we started recording professionally. And in no time, we had CDs. We had CDs out before anyone had CDs in our city, like physical copies with, you know, covers and track listings and things like that. No one had these things at the time, so it was like a big deal, you know, for our fans. We generated a fan base in South Jersey. It was something that I didn't actually appreciate until recently. We lost one of our members. He passed away, and his name was Jay Webb. And when he passed, our fans, we haven't been a group in several years, a long time, and our fans were reaching out to all of us, like, collectively. My heart goes out to you guys, all of you, because you lost a member of your group. And then it, like, all came back to me at once. Like, we had a fan base as early teens, you know what I mean? Into late teens. We were together a lot of years, and there were people that had our backs and that supported us, that bought our CDs so we could buy more CDs. Or there was people that bought our studio time so we could, you know, make the CDs. it was crazy that happened, because I had forgotten. It's just been so long. So because I came from that, I was really polished as an artist. By the end of that, I was coming of age and I was maturing. I was wild and reckless. And once I started to mature, my music started to mature. People are more receptive of that attitude change than they were with my music before. People were more drawn to that positivity and truth than they had ever been. And I was able to take it pretty far at this point. And I'm really proud of, you know, where I was able to go with it. But it all came from cypher circles in middle school, outside of school each morning.
Could you just explain real quick what a cypher circle is?
So a cypher circle is like a circle of MCs freestyling or you know, rapping to each other back and forth. And if you're lucky, you might even, a battle might pop off and two MCs will battle each other, and, you know, which is more entertaining, I think, than just cyphering back and forth. But a cypher circle is when you get a whole bunch of rappers together, they want to rap. And they don't just want to rap, they kind of want to flex. They kind of want to flex on the other MCs and say, you know, I can do this. Can you do this? Bet you can't do this. Well, listen what I can do. And well, without actually saying that, you just, you know, kind of do it. And it's very fluid, and it goes, you know, from one MC to the next kind of flawlessly. You know, when somebody's running too long, that somebody's going to jump in. And that's why the stereotypical yo, 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 like when people make fun of rappers and stuff, yo, yo, yo. And that's where that started from. It's like, you know, somebody's rapping too long and I'm going to say yo, yo, yo. And that means that I'm coming in. I'm going to rap. Cypher circles are a beautiful thing. And I've been blessed to still, you know, roll with a group of MCs who love nothing more than to cypher. It's an element of hip hop that we kind of lost, but it's one that has been around for my entire career and still has a strong presence.
So what roadblocks have you hit along the way?
So many, too many. I've been discouraged a bunch of times. You know, I was down with a label when I was 18, and I marched my troops into this bad situation. The label wanted two members of Ragtag, and I kind of was like, you know, they should take all of us or none of us at all. And everyone kind of thought that was a good idea. And then, you know, the label said, well, we'll take all of you guys. We were fresh. And it wound up being a bad situation. We wound up, you know, having a website with our name on it that we didn't really, you know, consent to. There was too much going on. We couldn't get any of the music that we recorded under this label. It was just like someone had it and they weren't giving it up. The show situation was really strange. There were strange things going on. And the label eventually wound up crumbling. But it really crippled us as a group, as a rap group. Once that situation fell through, a lot of us fell through, including me. I didn't think that I was going to do anything else. I was like, well, that's it. I don't even feel like doing anything else just because of the way that made me feel. You know what I mean? I wasn't sure if this was the right game for me to play. I took a few years off. I took, you know, some time off. I tried out some other things, but it wasn't long until I came back. This goes back to my best friend, Mo Soms. He called me and he said, hey, what are you doing? And I said, nothing. And he said, yeah, you're doing nothing. And he said, look at all these resources that you have yourself. You know what I mean? You built this whole thing and you have all of these people that are willing to help you and all of these resources and you're doing nothing. Why don't you just give it a shot? He was right. He was right about it. And it's crazy getting this phone call from my best friend, and I immediately got on the phone with those resources that he was reminding me that I had, and I immediately set up meetings and immediately set up shows and immediately got back into what I love to do. And I forgot that I love to do it. From there, you know, I started working on I'm With the DJ. And if you listen to I'm With the DJ, there's a lot of songs about, you know, that time period, which was kind of uncertain times. I talk a lot about, you know, quitting and coming back, things of that nature. And I thank Mo a lot on that CD, just because, you know, if he had never called me that day, who knows? If he never, you know, smacked me like that, I might have never woke up. That was the biggest roadblock that I hit, was that. There's been roadblocks since then. There's things that discourage you. There's, you know, some of my idols who maybe weren't the biggest fans of mine, who heard my music, might have said, you know, that they didn't care for it. That kind of hurts your feelings as an artist and discourages you. Even people in general not accepting who you are, not accepting, you know, your music or your style of music or the songs that you write, that can be discouraging. But after that roadblock, the initial roadblock, I never let anything stop me, and I never let anything bother me at all. I pretty much said, if I'm not, which we were having this conversation earlier, if I'm not where I want to be, I'm not complaining about nothing. And if I'm where I want to be, then there's no reason to complain anyway. But if you stop and complain about something, then you're stopping, and you can't do that. There's, you know, there's places that we got to go. So I tend not to focus on the roadblocks. They pop up from time to time, and I just go another way.
So has there been any disappointments along the way?
There has. There's been disappointments. Things don't go the way that we want them to go just because we want them to go that way. You know what I mean? Everything, you're kind of always hoping for the best. Anybody who's living a life and not hoping for the best, I mean, gee whiz, you need to get it together. There's not too much that I have to be disappointed in, just because why bother? I don't think that I really should be wasting my time focusing on things like that, which is why these last two questions I think that I answered, I'm kind of like drawing a blank, because it's like disappointments, roadblocks, failures have no, I pay them no mind. I give them no attention. I don't focus on them at all. Every day that I wake up, I think about what I'm going to do that day. I set goals for myself. I set goals for myself for the day. I set goals for myself for the week, the month, the year. And then in the grand scheme of things, where I want to be in life, it's all about goals, and it's never about disappointments or worrying about disappointments. Things are going to let you down, but you can't let them get you down.
Very well put. What's your most favorite concert you've ever been to?
Now, I haven't been to too many concerts per se. I've been to a ton of shows though. My favorite concert that I've been to was Atmosphere. Atmosphere played the Electric Factory in Philadelphia, and it was at a time that I think their catalog was kind of at its best. You know, it's hard to be a fan of someone for life, as people put it, because they're always changing and evolving and experimenting with new sounds and new things. And I never want to get mad about that. But there's things that are my cup of tea, and there's things that are not my cup of tea. But at this time, a few years ago, Atmosphere came to the Electric Factory, and they had an extensive catalog of music that I really personally enjoyed. And I took notes. I was watching, you know, Slug from Atmosphere entertain this massive crowd of people, and I was watching his mannerisms and the things he was doing and how he was engaging a large audience, as opposed to, you know, I'd only had to engage, you know, small audiences. And I always wondered, you know, how did people do this? And I was able to watch that show from a different viewpoint, I guess you would say, from a viewpoint of an artist who plans on entertaining a crowd of people like that. And I took notes, and you know, I watched the things that he did. And on top of that, it was just an overall great show. I think those guys have it together. I think they tour enough, and I think that they, you know, put on enough shows that they have pretty much polished their live performances. It was really impeccable, and I was really impressed with that. I think that that was the greatest show that I've ever been to.
So could you share a favorite memory?
There's so many. I think my favorite memory was working on my EP Sad Songs with Stress the White Boy and Chuck Treese in the studio. It was my first time in the studio with real industry professionals, you know what I mean? Gold Records, and, you know, Chuck played on River of Dreams by Billy Joel, and you know what I mean? So many things. It was in Bad Brains, and I'm in the studio with these guys, and I'm just like, I was a fan of them. And then to be in the studio with them and actually working on an actual project with them, it's like, wait a minute, are we actually working on a project together? And we kind of knocked out the project in like a day or two. All of my Sad Songs memories seemed like just one solid memory, but it was just the most amazing thing. I was, the songs that I wrote at that time really meant a lot to me. The instrumentals that I chose to write to really spoke to me in those ways. Just feeling the energy, the creative energy that came from those guys really inspired me. Like I was saying earlier, those are two people that really inspired me to create great things, because they're great people and they're great artists. Probably my best memory in music, my happiest memory as a person. There's so many great things about that time that I can't even name them all. It was just amazing experience.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, considering it was a big, very big deal for you, especially coming out of retirement just not too long before then.
It was, well, I came out of retirement for I'm With a DJ, and then Sad Songs came out, I think, 2 years later, whereas I had burned myself out from I'm With a DJ. I burned myself out in such a way where it's like I, you know, went totally crazy, and which is the reason why the songs are sad. It was, in a way, coming back, and it was also like shedding my skin. I was able to shed the skin of a run-of-the-mill, let's say run-of-the-mill hip-hop artist who, you know, raps over breakbeats and like is super focused on lyrical, miracle, physical, spiritual, you know what I mean? Type of, you know what I mean? Like, you know, flows like that and like super lyrical songs. And then to be in the studio with, you know, Stress, who has produced for, you know, Gym Class Heroes and like Lil Wayne, to create the songs that we created, they're good songs, and they can't really be placed into a box. And you can't say like, in this box is, you know, this particular style. There's so many influences to the songs. They come from a certain place. So it was, in a way, it was kind of like stepping out of something into a new thing. And it opened me up to a more broad audience and people that can go back and listen to I'm With a DJ and appreciate I'm With a DJ, you know, coming from Sad Songs. Like, this is where it started. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So what do your dreams for the future look like?
I just want to be happy, man. I don't plan on stopping anytime soon. I just want to do what I do, be happy doing it. I want to entertain people. I want to make people smile and laugh. I want to make people think. I just want to keep on keeping on and just, you know, put out my music, and hopefully we can change the world by doing that, by just, you know, sharing our story and sharing the things that we create with the world.
So before we get to your last thoughts, I know you've had some success on underground hip-hop charts.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like to mention some of those?
I've released all of my songs, all of my singles this year, exclusively on djbooth.net, which is a great site for mainstream and underground hip-hop. I'm the only independent artist to top their charts on their mainstream charts. And I pretty much every single that I release goes right to the top of their charts. And really, I only have my fans to thank for that. Because it's an exclusive release, I can send all of them to one place, and that's djbooth.net. And their charts really reflect that. And people notice that's a very respected website. And people have begun to notice me from that, or know me from the DJ Booth charts. Sometimes when I meet people for the first time, I say, oh, Rich Quick, yeah, I've seen you on the charts on DJ Booth. And I think that that's so dope, because that means that, you know, what we're doing is working, and the fan support is bringing me to a point where, you know, people are noticing that support.
So is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah. The song that I wanted you guys to play is a song by John Lennon, and it's called Imagine, which is my number one favorite song ever. And I felt it appropriate because we're on Dreamers Podcast, and people have always said that I'm a dreamer. And people have always, throughout the course of my life, try to like persuade me to do other things or be more realistic with my expectations and to be less of a dreamer. People want to bring you back to reality because the reality of their situation sucks and they don't want to be the only one. I think that John Lennon really had it right when he was writing the song Imagine. I think that we all should be dreamers. And we would be a lot happier.
I agree. people just give up on their dreams for absolutely one reason or another. Love for you to plug all your websites and how people connect with you, and as well as your EP again and your mixtape.
My first mixtape is called I'm With a DJ. It's available on datpiff.com. Or you can just Google Rich Quick, I'm With a DJ. It's available a million places. And my EP is called Sad Songs, and that is available for download on iTunes. You can get a hold of me at RichMFNQuick on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And my website is www.richmfnquick.com. I would love to hear from you. I always make it a point to interact with the people that reach out to me. I always make it a point to interact with my fans. Please hit me up, talk to me, ask me questions, whatever you want. I love y'all.
Well, I'm really glad that you could take the time to come in early this morning and
you got it.
Be on the show. And I hope that everybody checks out your stuff. I know it's good. I personally have bought it, and I have copies of it sitting right here on my desk now.
There you go.
So, yeah, thank you again for coming on the show, Rich.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.